Good morning, and welcome to the Garden Conversation. We are this morning in another on-site garden conversation. We are at Donna Cotati's garden.
Hi.
Thank you, Donna, for letting me come back to your garden. Donna was one of my mentors. When I came to Haines, I had not a lot of gardening experience, and Donna was the one who taught me a lot about gardening in Southeast Alaska. Just by, I came to your garden and worked in it. And
yeah, so that's, I needed some help.
and that's how you learn, is I learned a lot by just watching for, I think I did that 2 seasons.
I think so. And you came and gardened, you weeded while I was gone.
Yeah. And but the main thing that I learned was just being able to watch and observe what crops, what did well, how it did well, and all of that. So anyway, thank you for starting
You're
me on
welcome.
This path. People always ask me, or they ask me questions, and I still don't feel like I really know very much about it.
Of course. I mean, no matter how much you know, there's going to be a lot
there's
more.
There's always a lot more to know. But the idea of a garden conversation is that we get to share what we do know. So I get to come back to the garden, and it's changed since I was here 20-odd years ago working in it. But there's a few things, and one of the things I first noticed when I walked up, we're standing in front of the doorstep, there's this incredibly beautiful plant. What is it?
It is called Ligularia. And I remember it had a common name. That's the Latin name. I don't remember the common name. But I was looking for something in Juneau that would survive under my... Actually, I moved it. It used to be over under those cherry trees. As something that would work in the shade. And I was at a nursery in Juneau, and she said, oh, this thing's amazing. And so it's these big yellow... rich, warm yellow daisy-like
things
with
brown
and
white centers. Yeah, just like an orange yellow. Yeah. Oh, they're just beautiful.
And these long, long red stems they're on, and they kind of lean out this way and that. It's pretty tall. It's probably 5 feet tall.
Yeah, they are tall.
And then big heart-shaped leaves that are red on the back. And I was just telling Mardell that I have used these leaves for several local bridal bouquets where you just take one of these leaves and a big peony in the middle of it. Because it is a heart-shaped leaf, you put the peony in and then string your ribbons on it.
And they're a beautiful leaf. They're rich, dark green with that red behind it. So
And they're purple on the back.
Or purple on the back,
red or purple.
Yeah. So Ligularia. And that's probably, if I remember right, there's a bunch of Ligularias.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I think there is. But anyway, that's a good tip. If you've got a good shady spot and... it's a pretty big plant.
And it's a big plant. I'd say that thing, the leaves and all, is probably 4 feet in diameter.
Yeah, yep.
So you got to give it room.
Yeah, so we're going to wander back out into the garden proper a little bit here. And one of the things that I notice about your garden is that a lot of people say that you should never build a raised bed that is bigger than 4 feet wide, bigger than what you can reach across. And you have broken that rule. You have one big, very large raised bed that, what, it's 20 by 20?
I'm not
by
sure
15?
Even exactly how long. Probably it is probably close to 16 or 20 or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there's a little history behind this, actually, that originally this was where our first garden was, and we had 3 4-foot-wide beds made out of logs. And when the logs became so rotten that they couldn't really hold the dirt anymore, we decided to put a rock-faced concrete
So this is a
surface.
Permanent rim around it that's about a foot and a half tall, something like that?
Yeah, well, in places, and the other side is lower, you know. Uh-huh. Over here, it's 2 feet tall, probably, over there. Because the ground is not even, so this is even, the ground is not. And so it's all contained, all the dirt is contained, and it is definitely higher than the surrounding area. And then I have paths going through it, so actually I could, you know, make the beds one direction one year and a different direction the next year if I wanted to. I usually kind of keep them the same. But then the weeds and grasses that grow around it, when I weed whack them, there's this wall that's protecting seeds don't
You're not
get
putting
all
thrown seeds up
into
it.
The or not as much in any case.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit easier to keep this area clean of the weeds because it's separate.
So you've done the same thing as a raised bed in that you have isolated it from weeds, from roots as well, but you've just done it in a larger...
Well, actually, it's not isolated on the bottom underneath. It's not.
So do you have roots coming in?
Well, it's not really, though, so not too much. Mm-hmm. These beds originally were dug into the blue clay 18 inches deep.
So
the
that's first beds. Isolation thing there.
So the soil is very, very deep. We built the soil for years. And, but, you know, the brambles could work their way in, yes.
Yes, they could, as they do everywhere. So one of the things that I noticed as we walked by this in one corner, beautiful, beautiful chard. This was a, 2020 was a great chard year. But you've also got beautiful celery. Do you have any secrets? I don't have very good luck with celery.
Well, you have to start it early. So I used to start them at the end of February. Now I've figured out that I can wait till mid-March or something.
Okay.
You get them started inside, and you plant them out when they're really pretty tiny. When it's finally, you know, warm enough to start to work your soil, you can put them out pretty much as early as you want to. But they're these little tiny things. Celery needs lots of water.
That's what I
understand. You know, keep the watering can nearby and give them an extra. When you don't water anything else in the garden, water your celery.
Okay.
And keeping the slugs off them is another big one.
So
I've been through some cans of sluggo this year, but it's funny because some years they go after the celery, and some and this year it seems to be other crops,
and they haven't really bothered
my celery. One celery tip I used to do, and just I haven't done it recently, but you save your eggshells all winter long in a plastic bag, let them dry out, and then you crush them. And if you put a ring of eggshells around each celery plant, the slugs don't like to cross it.
Okay. Do you ever do, I can't think of the word right now. I was told that if you put it's more than a collar. If you protect it, blanching it, that's what they call it. They call it blanching.
Yes.
You wrap some newspaper or cloth or something around it. Do you ever do that with your celery?
You know, I have not. It makes for a milder celery if you're trying to eat it raw.
Oh, okay.
And the books that I have about with organic gardening, they've all recommended that you plant your celery in the bottom of a trench. And usually, I didn't really do that this year, but usually I have, it is down deeper than the rest. That way it gets holds more water.
Fill the trough. More moisture.
But the other reason for doing it, according to one of the books I have, is that as the plant becomes bigger, you can pull the dirt back in over it. And then you're blanching it with your dirt.
Oh, so
yeah,
you're so...
I'm not sure but what that contributes to more
dirty
slugs. You know?
Well, that too. I don't know if I want dirty celery, though.
I don't generally rake my dirt back into that trench. You know, when you're watering, I mean, it kind of works. Some of it works its way back in.
Yeah.
But no, I like flavorful celery, and I mostly cook with it, so...
Okay. Yeah, I've seen 2020 has been a good year for celery for in Haines, Alaska, because I've seen a bunch of celery that's quite nice. So now we're going to walk over to the other side of the garden. We're walking past beds that these are potatoes you've already harvested.
And we got like 4 or 5 gallon buckets or more.
So it's a good potato year.
It was a good potato
year. Do you have any problems?
We had the rain helped.
Do you have problems with slugs in your potatoes at all?
I haven't.
Okay. So now we're on another side of the garden, and here we have an interesting experiment that you've talked about. Can you talk about this garlic scene that you got going on?
It's not even an experiment. It's just I decided I didn't have enough. Okay, so years ago, I planted my garlic always in the fall because I thought that's what you're supposed to do. And then we had some of those, you know, couple of years where it was no snow on the ground and bitter cold and wind.
And so you lost your garlic.
I lost the garlic. Mm-hmm. So I had to replant in spring. And I replanted in spring, and lo and behold, no problem. I got garlic, right? So then I just started planting in the spring, but then it's not ready as quickly, right? So there's, you're anxious for some garlic, and it's not ready. So then one day, it just hit me like a light bulb. I remembered what Nancy Soggy did. And Nancy Soggy, for those of you who don't know, she lived on Paradise Cove, and she and Irvin were the early pioneers out here, and she had a huge garden. She was our garden guru for most of
us. She was also another one of my mentors.
Mud Bay in the early days, right? And so finally, it just hit me one day. Oh, yeah. Nancy goes, and she takes her pruner shears, and she goes and cuts a bunch of hemlock boughs. And she lays maybe 6 inches worth of hemlock across that garlic after she's planted
After it's planted, your normal way, just, you know,
just plant your garlic like normal. And then put these hemlock boughs, 4 to 6 inches of it, over the top, and that holds the air,
which is your insulation.
Trap the air, and then you put a layer of seaweed on top of that. If you put your seaweed directly on the garden, there's a chance that your garlic might turn slimy and too wet and all that kind of stuff. But what it does when you put it on top of the hemlock, or what I see it looks like it does, mm-hmm. is that the seaweed pile becomes like a raincoat. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. my garlic, even though it might be pouring rain in the middle of winter, it's not really...
It's not getting doused.
It's not getting so much that it mm-hmm. that the water then freezes mm-hmm. to kill the garlic. Mm-hmm. Because if you had standing water in your garlic and it froze, you're going to kill it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I also just really, air is really what the insulative factor is. And so you're creating a lot of air yeah. pockets. It makes perfect
and
sense.
And if you put straight seaweed, you'd have not an ounce
of
air.
You don't have any air, no. So we are right now looking at half of your garlic. So the fall planted garlic is gone.
And
you've harvested.
It's dry. It's in my living room. It's yep. dry now. Yeah.
And you still have the stuff you yep. planted this spring.
It'll probably be ready in a few weeks.
It's and you just cut the scapes off a little bit ago, it looks
yeah.
like.
Yeah. yeah. And then I'll harvest them.
So
can I say one more thing about seaweed while we
you
were
can.
Talking about seaweed? So years ago, I had two potato beds, and I was traveling away quite a lot. So I thought, well, if I mulch them, that'll help hold the water. But I didn't get them both mulched. I only got one of them done. Mm-hmm. And I had someone else watering and taking care of the garden. They both beds had the same amount of water, the same amount of rain, the same amount of everything else. And one bed had twice as much potato. So what I had done was I put 12 inches, once the potatoes are planted, mm-hmm. you know, 6, 12 inches deep, whatever, you can get them down there. I put 12 inches of seaweed on. If it's only 4 or 6 inches, it'll shrivel down and the weeds will come right through it. But if you put 12 inches of seaweed, the potatoes will come right up through it, no problem, and you will never have a weed in your potato bed. Mm-hmm. And when you turn the soil to dig the potatoes out, you will see that the worms are just going crazy at the contact zone between mm-hmm. the seaweed and the dirt. So they're fertilizing the soil at the same time. Mm-hmm.
And so that bed with the seaweed on top of it gave you better production as well
potatoes.
As you've got
yeah.
instant.
Yeah, twice as much production. Yeah. And then you didn't have an extra chore of turning your
right,
seaweed
in either.
Right,
you've got your fertilizer already there.
It got turned yeah. in when you yeah. dug mm-hmm. the potatoes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't slimy?
The seaweed?
When you turned it over, was it decomposed enough that it wasn't...
Oh, yeah,
like
it dries up over the summer. Yeah. You put 12 inches on there, by the time you harvest the potatoes, it's not mm-hmm.
it wasn't,
not much
it
left.
It wasn't slimy or anything.
You know, it's kind of okay. been worked in pretty good by mm-hmm. then.
Okay. Okay, so that's a good tip for potato growing. And so what are those crops over there that you've got? Leeks,
That is leeks,
like?
And then I just took out fennel, and then there's parsnips and carrots. Mm-hmm. And that bed is a 2 foot tall, you know, that's the last garden bed we built, and I thought, I'm going to be old someday and not want to bend over. Here I am, right? And we lined the bottom, so the notion was to keep the weeds out. They can crawl in.
Has it worked?
No, you see that thimbleberry climbing up there. It's coming out of the cracks and things. Mm-hmm. So that corner has already been invaded. You know,
yeah, it's pretty hard. But you can really slow them down by doing
yes,
those kind
absolutely.
Of things. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you said you harvested fennel. Tell me what you do with fennel.
I use it in Italian sauces, pasta mm-hmm. recipes. I've got a fennel salad recipe mm-hmm. in there.
You don't do anything to preserve it or anything because
it
keeps quite well, right? In the refrigerator?
It keeps pretty good in the refrigerator,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Fennel is one of those crops that...
I mean, I keep, as far as keeping in the refrigerator, this storage cabbage, I had red cabbage all the way into June this mm-hmm. year.
Yeah.
And
is this the Johnny's storage cabbage?
Yes, it is.
Yes,
uh-huh.
yeah. That definitely is a cabbage. It's, as I've been in a lot of people's gardens this summer, I see that is the cabbage that has gone throughout the valley, and a lot of people are growing it because it is such a great storage cabbage.
And it's the one that keeps, and it mm-hmm. does, like, they're just starting to head
yep.
up. I mean, they need another month.
They need another month.
Yeah.
So that's another advantage in that you can keep them in the garden for yeah. a long time, and they don't freeze very easily. You know, when it gets cold nights, I come and put a piece of Rime over them. And then you've got a Savoy cabbage.
Oh, I don't even do that with the Rime. It's too much trouble. But unless it's an early snowstorm, then I might. But, I tried Savoy for the first time, and this was locally produced seed.
Oh, nice.
When I went to the little thing this winter mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. the Found Great. Root people, I believe it was. And I said, I want to buy some seeds, but I want them to be ones that you made yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the first time I've ever had Savoy. And I'm not sure if I'll do it again. That seems like the slugs like it better in there, although they've attacked that one a little bit too.
I find that slugs, it depends upon where the location is more than... The one thing they don't like is I find that they don't like my storage cabbages nearly
really?
As much as other ones. So it's been my experience. But I see you've got red cabbages too, and they like anything that's in their way.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So.
And I haven't been quite as on top of... I just went and looked the other day for more sluggo at the store, and they didn't have any.
Oh, no. Another thing that's out of enough of it, enough of a supply. So, okay, well, unfortunately, the time has come. We have not gone through the whole garden, but we've gone through the garden, the vegetable part of the garden. We're surrounded by huge amounts of perennial plants and whatnot. We could do a whole other show on that at some point, but no time today. So thank you very much for
You're very welcome.
Having me
fun.
Into your garden. Yeah, thank you. Okay, until the next garden conversation, this is Mardell Gunn and Donna Cotardi in Donna's Garden.